Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery with your host, Jane Marquis, ND. In this captivating episode, we have a very special guest, Yogite Aaron, who will take us on a remarkable journey encompassing unorthodox perspectives on stretching, flexibility, and so much more. Aaron's unique story serves as a powerful source of inspiration, touching us on various aspects of personal growth and transformation. Through his experiences, he illuminates the path to self-acceptance, the pursuit of dreams, overcoming chronic pain, discovering life purpose, creating a life filled with love, and becoming a change maker on this planet. Join us on this transformative episode of Meltdown to Mastery, where we embark on a journey of self-discovery, inspiration, and growth. Get ready to expand your perspective, ignite your inner fire, and embrace the limitless possibilities that await you. Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Welcome, Yogi Aaron.
Thank you so much, Jane, for having me here. I really appreciate it.
Excited. We're going to get into your unorthodox perspectives on stretching, but first I want to get into your really beautiful story about self-acceptance, following your dreams, overcoming chronic pain, discovering life purpose, creating a life you love, and being a change maker on this planet. So if you could speak on that first, it would be wonderful.
Oh my goodness, that's such a loaded question.
I know. It's all in your story, you know, it'll unravel.
I think, you know, well, the whole self-acceptance. I mean, for me, the yoga has really helped me to unravel what it means to accept myself and to, yeah, to kind of know myself at every single level. For me, that has been always the biggest part of the journey, in the yoga journey anyways, is who am I at my core? So part of that journey, and kind of, you said, how have you become a change maker? I think the biggest way that I've become a change maker, at least lately, is that a lot of people get into yoga because of the stretching, because of that they have an idea of what their body should look like. And I was probably no exception to that. So I got into yoga because my muscles were really tight, because I felt really restricted in my body. I also didn't understand who I was. And as I got into doing more yoga, a lot of great things unfolded, but there was also a lot of pain that started developing in different areas of my body. And I always thought, oh, well, I need to stretch more. I need to open up my hips more. I need to do all of these things more. And I ended up hurting myself to such a point that I ended up in a surgeon's office at the age of 45, who was telling me I might need a spinal fusion in my lower back. So that kind of made me kind of pause for a moment to look at, well, is what I'm teaching, is what I'm doing, is what I'm practicing really helpful, or is it causing more harm? And that kind of stopped me in my tracks to do a little bit of introspection, to kind of take stock. And I kind of completely course corrected and realized, hey, the stretching actually is doing us more harm than good. And so that kind of took me into the whole stop stretching movement, which I've kind of started, and get a lot of, you know, a lot of people in the yoga world are not necessarily happy with me right now, but that's okay.
That is okay. You have to be unorthodox to find your true purpose.
Absolutely. I'm very unorthodox.
So how did yoga help you find yourself? It can include a lot of reflection just because of silence. and you learn to listen to your body?
I think that, so the kind of practice that I teach, which is the yoga practice, yoga methodology, according to the yoga scripture, yoga sutras, is that we learn to separate ourselves from everything. One of the biggest misconceptions about yoga is that yoga is actually about union. It's about we're connected to everything and everything is connected to us. Real yoga is actually the process of separating ourselves from all that we think that we're connected to. And when we separate ourselves and we do that diligently, we're actually then at that moment able to see who we really are. And for me, that has been the continuous process. You know, one of my favorite teachers, Ramana Krishna, who is one of the great sages of the last century, he gave us one of the most powerful, or a very powerful meditation, contemplation, affirmation, if you will. And it's very simple. And the question is, who am I? And the idea is that anytime you ask that question, you come up with an answer. So who am I? Well, I'm a doctor. Well, then go and ask that question again. Well, I'm a father. Well, then ask the question again. You keep asking it until you get to the core of your being and recognize that everything that you want to attach yourself to is just a projection. It's not really who you are at your core. And so the yoga journey helps us, has helped me to understand who I am more at my core. And understand, and this is an important part, at least for me in my own journey, is understand where the core of my power lies. And what has come up and what's repeatedly come up and shown is that the more I am in touch with my authentic self, that is where the core of my power lies. Because when I'm in touch with who am I at my core, nothing will deter me. Nothing shakes my foundation. Nothing shakes me as a human being. I don't know if that makes sense to you or not, but that's what the yoga journey has done for me.
So stripping labels and programs.
And stripping labels, stripping programs, but there's so many labels. Mm. You know, even having the label, like this is a huge label that I think a lot of people get. Especially women, I'm going to say women right now because they're the ones that say this, what's coming up in my mind, but like, I am a powerful woman. Like that is in and of itself is a label in a box. It's maybe a good strategy to get us to a certain point, but what yoga says is actually, that's not who you are. There's something much deeper.
Yes, something much deeper. Describe what you're talking about.
Yeah, so there's so much different scriptural reference to this idea of what it means to go deeper. And that, you know, we talk about, you know, this projection of like strength. So many of us seek that projection of strength, a projection of confidence. But in all of the spiritual teachings, you know, there's this idea of when we do go deeper, when we understand ourselves more fully, that we're able to tap into this place that has unlimited power. I think of that scriptural reference from Psalms that David cites, and he says, you know, be still and know that I'm God. And you know, in that stillness is the power, is the strength that so many of us are craving. And yoga, you know, for me in my own journey has helped to reveal what that is and help me to, I don't know if tapping into it is really the right word because it's always there. You know, it's always a part of who we are. but it's aligning with it, is knowing that I am that strength, knowing that I don't need to project anything, that it's all going to come out, you know, naturally. Does that make sense, Jane?
Yes. And it's part of it is stripping the labels and realizing that we're beings of a spiritual nature, an energetic nature, rather than doctor, wife, instructor. You know, there's so many labels that keep us wrapped up in that. Like, we keep searching for more to be better with those labels, but really we're pretty complete.
Yes, absolutely.
So how did all of that help you with your self-acceptance? There's a calming effect to knowing that, isn't there?
I think, you know, when I started yoga, I was 18 and there was so much frenetic, kind of unfocused energy at that moment in my life. And it kind of manifested in different ways. But as I've deepened in my yoga practice, I think coming back again to understanding who we are at our core, you know, one of the teachings of yoga says that when we experience yoga in the power of this practice, this comes from Sutra 248, Patanjali says that nothing disturbs us in life. That, and the way that I kind of think about that sometimes is like, you know, if there's a hurricane going on, you know, Category 5 hurricane, and you're standing at the center of it all and just witnessing, you know, everything flying around you, and you're not being your core of who, how you're standing and who you are is not affected. And so I kind of like think about that in life, like, you know, that we as yogis are standing in the midst of all of this political chaos of, you know, this person saying one thing, this person saying another thing, you know, there's drama in the family, there's, you know, all of this kind of stuff is moving around us. And we are that perpetual pillar of stability in life that is rooted and grounded in the core of who we are.
And I remember having a feeling one day that our bodies are just temporary. And there's something very soothing about that. Or, you know, knowing that we are much more than our body and our label.
May I tell you a little quick story?
Yes.
I had that same, you know, I had that same awareness in yoga. The ultimate practice in yoga is to realize that the body is what you just said. It's temporary. Everything is temporary in life. And that whole practice of non-attachment leads us to that truth that nothing is permanent except the self. And I had that real awareness when I was 35 and I was in the Himalayas, and I was about 25, 26 kilometers from help. And I was sitting on top of the glacier, or coming down from this glacier, and a boulder twice the size of a bowling ball came down and hit my leg. And as you can imagine, fractured it. When I say fractured, I mean completely severed it in two, as later x-rays would show. But there was a long moment when I was sitting on that mountain and I realized this could be it. And I've had that, you know, I had to, a couple of things happen in that moment, but I had to, in that moment, be content with the life that I had led. And then obviously I got out of that moment and I'm here today. So since then, I've kind of walked around with that idea that anything can be taken away at any moment. And so that helps me to live more in the moment of, you know, live more fully present in the moment and to appreciate the moment as opposed to like longing for the next moment. be here in this moment, because the next moment may not come.
Right? Letting go of the labels.
Yes.
Living in the moment. It's such a profound key to being inwardly happy. And yet, so paradoxical, right? Because we think happiness comes with money and status. And then we'll be, you know, then we'll be happy. But it always lies in the future. So how did this release you to follow your dreams and create a life that you really love?
Up until that moment, I feel like I was living in purpose to a large degree. That was the year 2000, it happened in 2007. That was also the year that I had bought Blue Osa, or started to invest in buying Blue Osa and turning it into something. And I think that moment, more than anything, being on the mountain and being, you know, on that razor edge of death or life, that kind of helped me to crystallize in my mind, you know, what is the life that I really want to live? I can't say that I wasn't living in purpose before, but that helped me to, I think, get me over any kind of hesitation or hurdles of, you know, because I was making that decision to move to Costa Rica, and I was like, okay, this is it. You know, life is too short to be sitting on the edge of, you know, I can't or can I, but you just got to dive in. And that kind of helped me to gather up the courage, I guess, if you want to use that word, to just take greater risks and greater leaps into the unknown. And ever since then, I haven't really ever looked back on anything. It's just, anytime an opportunity, if you want to use that word again, opportunity or calling has come up, I just kind of dive in with both. I kind of dive in with both feet now and don't hesitate. One of my favorite little expressions that I kind of came up with after that period was, the more you wait, the more you constipate.
Right.
And that's kind of become one of the axioms I live by. The more you wait, the more you constipate.
Yeah, because we're so afraid of pursuing those dreams because they might be impossible. Like we're afraid we'll fail.
Yeah. I mean, people, and the thing is, it's like, those are two words that people must eliminate from their vocabulary, that word success and the word failure. If we're going to use the word success, we need to redefine it. I think success is living life to the fullest and knowing that you have failed, you know, thousands of times. You know, if you want to use those words, because if you're not failing, you're not living. But we have become so locked into our mind of like, oh, I'm not worthy unless I succeed, and not realizing like it's through those times that you get knocked down that actually is what you needed to, you know, to allow that seed of success to germinate, to allow that one moment of whatever it is that you're striving towards to really fully manifest and shine as brightly as it did. That's the only way that we grow as humans, is by, you know, getting knocked down a lot.
Yeah.
And learning how to not only stand back up, but stand back up and laughing all the way. One of my teachers taught me, if you're going to be a mess, then be a happy mess. And also has served me well.
Right? So how does it help to laugh at, do you just laugh at the circumstance knowing that it's just leading you somewhere?
I think I've always had this laughter. I don't know if there was a moment when it blossomed in a different way, but I remember I was with Mark Victor Hansen, who wrote the book Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I was on a private thing with him and a few other people. And he said, when you laugh at problems in life, they contract, they get smaller. And so things, you know, problems become smaller when we learn to laugh at them. And so that has served me. And also too, like, we have to laugh because, you know, the creator has such a sense of humor. The predicaments and the things that we get ourselves into, and humans, we're very good at creating a mess for ourselves. The only way that gives me personally, and I'm speaking about me right now, some perspective on things that are happening around me that sometimes can feel very overwhelming. The only way that I can get perspective is by laughing at them, because they are intrinsically funny.
They are. And they make the best stories once you're out of it.
Yeah. Like that story I was telling you about being on the Himalayas with a broken leg, almost on, you know, on razor edge of death. I mean, it's a great story now, right?
It is, but in the moment, not so much. So all of this leads you to discover your life purpose. How does somebody know when they're following that, when they're following their, not just their dream, but the reason they're here?
I think there's a huge checklist. I would say at the top of the list, you're working hard. If you're really living your purpose, you're working hard. But I'm going to say something that's going to sound contradictory, that it's also seamless. It's also effortless, that you're doing it from a place that's just, it just flows. And that, again, a lot of us tend to misconstrue, I think, that living in purpose means living an easier life or living a life without any effort. I always, you know, it's that contradiction of a teaching that there's this effortless effort state that we're living in. And I believe that when we're in purpose, like really in purpose, like we're in that place, and that things are also just flowing, and that they are congruent. And there's a sense of familiarity, and there's a sense of like, I am where I'm supposed to be. There's a lot of times, been a few times when I have not felt like I was where I was supposed to be. And when I get that feeling inside of me, it's not necessarily saying like I'm not in the place in my life where I should be, but that I need to change a perspective, or I need to redirect some of my energy. And it always comes from this feeling. There's this feeling of, again, I'm speaking about me, but there's this feeling of restlessness, or a feeling of like something isn't quite in alignment right now. Things are not congruent. One of the indicators too is that there's this discontentment at the depths of my soul. And I remember the last time that really happened in a powerful way was when I was living my dream job, actually. I'm a scuba diver, and I always wanted to be a scuba diving instructor, living in the Caribbean, on the beach, teaching people how to dive, living under the tropical sun. And I was living that life, but I was so discontent. I had so much discontentment, and I realized I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. I was living my dream life, and I was making good money. I was having this great life, but I wasn't doing what I was meant to do. And that was starting to eat at my heart. And that was when I was kind of like, what should I be doing? Teaching yoga. And I kind of spun a globe and ended up in New York City teaching yoga, which I always tell people that was the biggest door that I ever walked through, because it was through that door that opened me up to the work I did in New York, and then ultimately opening up my yoga retreat center in Costa Rica.
Mm, so interesting. And there's that feeling of discontent inside, a little bit of tension, right?
Yeah.
And a feeling too that you're not really contributing, which there's something about contributing to the planet. Like you say, the ultimate is being a change maker that allows us to work hard, but be in flow.
Yes.
And, yeah. Whereas if we're retiring in a way and not contributing, then you feel discontent. But it's hard to put your finger on these things. It's good to talk about it.
It's good to talk about it. And I think it's also good for people. Like we don't do enough self-introspection in our life, you know, take time to contemplate on the bigger questions. In one of the last teacher training immersions I did, one of the things I was really shocked about was how many people came into the teacher training, and it was almost like everybody in the whole group had said the exact same thing or a variation of that. I don't feel at home within myself.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that signals so many things. One of my takeaways was that we don't spend enough time to be at home within ourselves, to kind of like check in with ourselves. Am I living in my purpose? I'm sensing this discontentment. What is the seed of this discontentment? Where is it coming from? Is it external? Is it something externally? Is that seed of discontentment just me pining after the newest iPhone? Or is that seed of discontentment, you know, me really, my heart is craving a substantial relationship in my life that it is missing? You know, we don't take time to kind of understand ourselves. And I think like with yoga, that's one of the greatest gifts of yoga, if we're doing the practice properly, is that it is a continuous check-in with ourselves. And so that, and we give ourselves permission to ask those questions that you said that we don't ask often enough.
Mm-hmm. And to pause. I've always found when I'm discontent or something doesn't feel right, just to pause and ask. And yeah. Then the answers come and you know what direction to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So did this state of flow that eventually came help you overcome the pain, the chronic pain that existed in your body? Because I find pain in the body is a signal of what's going on in the mind, the subconscious, the part of us that we're not paying attention to. And often when we get stuck in life, we can also feel very tense in our bodies, which can lead to that inflexibility and the pain that often comes at those times.
I have to say with that statement, I think there's a lot of things I would agree with. I think there's a lot of truth in that statement. And on the other side, I think sometimes body is just body. What I see happening in the mind a lot of times for a lot of people is that they're stressed out. And that feeling of being stressed creates, you know, stress in and of itself creates a lot of inflammation in the body. And when there's inflammation in the body, there's going to be a lot of problems. And I think we can all agree with that. That's why we take sometimes anti-inflammatory. So in my case, you know, there was definitely some emotional stuff I had to address, but the real problem kind of got exacerbated through the stretching and through the kind of physical manipulations. And, you know, and I had that in my mindset. Like, I'm like, okay, my back is in pain. What am I not really addressing in my life? Or, you know, I've got tight hamstrings and tight hips. So what kind of emotions am I holding on to? And I realized after a certain amount of time, like, I'm not holding on to anything. This is just a physical issue that's just not being addressed. And so how I started to really heal myself was starting to understand how muscles work better and where, you know, how do we create more stability in our joints? And that kind of like culminated, I was 45 at the time, and I ended up in a surgeon's office, an orthopedic surgeon who said, we might need to do a spinal fusion in your lower back. That was kind of like a real moment of reckoning for me because, you know, talking about labels, here I was teaching at that point, like yoga for 25 years. And, you know, I always felt like I knew something about the body, and I've been teaching people about their body. So it was like, it kind of pulled into question everything that I had learned at that point and everything that I had been teaching, and kind of made me go back to square one. And made me realize I have to understand the body in a better way, you know, and understand what is the source of pain in the body and how do we start to correct it from a physiologically speaking. So that's kind of how I started to heal myself, through muscle activation. And then of course by stop stretching.
Interesting.
So at that moment, I never stretched again after that.
And are you flexible?
I have incredible range of motion. And I would say that since I stopped stretching, my range of motion is and started activating, my range of motion has improved a lot.
Right. So tell us about activation.
Sure. So like most people think that because you use the word flexibility, that in order to be flexible, I have to stretch a muscle. And your range of motion is not depicted on how far a muscle can stretch or how far a muscle can elongate. It really is dependent on how much a muscle can shorten. So you think about like, you know, Stiff Biff, who tries to bend over and touch his toes. Well, if he can barely get his hands to his knees, you're going to look at him and think, oh, Biff, you need to stretch your hamstrings. You have a tight lower back. What's really going on with Biff is that his core muscles, his trunk flexors more specifically, are not shortening properly. And because they're not shortening properly, it's causing a reciprocal tightness. Like, so the lower back becomes really tight because the muscles that should be shortening are not shortening properly. So in muscle activation, we start to go, okay, well, what direction are we moving the body? And let's improve those muscles' ability to contract and contract properly. And then we do that through different muscle activation practices. And it could be as simple as like lying on your back. So we're talking about the trunk flexors right now, lying on your back and maybe doing like a crunch and holding it for 6 seconds and just coming back down and completely relaxing and then coming out. I'm simplifying it a little bit in order to give some visuals. It's a little bit more than that, but that's the gist of it. And so even if we have a lot of muscles in a certain area, like Stiff Biff, he's probably really muscular. He probably does a lot of, you know, lifting heavy weights, but he has little range of motion because those muscles have become tonic. Those muscles have become static. They're not able to contract or lengthen. So we need to start improving their ability to shorten and shorten properly.
Right. So because one set of muscles isn't contracting or doing its work, there's an opposite set that is taking on too much and then becoming very tight.
Yes. Yes. And that's exactly what's happened and why people end up with tight hamstrings. To use that example, that the quads are not shortening properly, so the hamstrings end up tightening up. The real work should be happening in the quads, not the hamstrings. And whenever we stretch a muscle, aka the hamstrings in this case, not only do we negatively affect the hamstrings, but we also then, in reciprocal action, end up negatively affecting the quads and all of the hip flexors as well.
Right. So how did you figure all this out? See, it was through your own pain and nothing worked, right? You probably tried everything that was...
Chiropractor, acupuncturist, massage therapist, you name it, I've done it. How did it work? Well, before I ended up in the surgeon's office, years before, I had met somebody who had done muscle activation technique on me. And I would sometimes come into their office in an enormous amount of pain, you know, whether it was in my neck or related to my lower back or something. And like, if I walked into the office with like pain out 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10, I would always leave with like the pain being like a 1 out of 10 or less. And it always kind of blew me away because I would see an acupuncturist and they would decrease it a little bit, or I would see a massage therapist and they would decrease it a little bit, but then the pain always came back with a vengeance. And whenever I saw Eric, this guy that I was seeing that did MAT on me, it always got it down to a 1. So when I ended up coming out of the surgeon's office, I pretty much contacted Eric right away. And asked him, I said, what do you think? Should I do this MAT stuff? You know, should I start studying it? And in my mind, I was only going to do a few of the courses just to kind of learn a little bit more about my body and, you know, feed that part of my brain that's always curious about everything. And as I got into it, a few things started to click for me, but one is like very few of us in the sort of, if you want to say fitness world or yoga world / fitness world, have very little understanding of how the body actually works and how muscles work. So that kind of prompted me to decide, okay, I'm going to start building some of this into my curriculum and start taking some of the basic ideas and building it into my curriculum. And then as I started to do that and I started to see how positively it was affecting my students, I'd have students, you know, usually about 80% of students coming into my teacher training immersions are in dealing with some sort of pain, infliction or other, you know, bad hips, bad lower back, bad neck, tight shoulders, you know, whatever. And usually by somewhere between day 6 and day 10, they just all started, like their problems just started going away and they weren't dealing with them anymore. And that was kind of like when the light bulb started going off and I started developing this a lot further than I did at that moment.
Yeah. I'm just trying to, because I always, as being the homeopath, naturopath that I am.
Yes.
I'm always trying to see the mind-body connection. And I'm thinking that with the tension, right, we're so focused on that.
Yes.
When usually the real problem lies somewhere else, you know, in the unconscious or somewhere else. So the body's trying to tell us, pay attention to somewhere else to balance things, right? But we're not paying attention because all our focus is on the pain. It's blurring your vision a little, you know?
There's a few things I want to say to that. But one is like, yeah, everything is connected. My teacher, Greg, was talking one time about how a person, one of his clients was having shoulder problems and he fixed the shoulder and then she came back with more shoulder problems. The cycle repeated a few times. And then one day he was like, I should really check, you know, the feet, and then started realizing like the feet were not aligned properly. Mm-hmm. And so if that's not working, then of course it shoots up the body. And so everything is interconnected. And so that's one thing. But another thing I wanted to mention is like, especially in yoga, there's this big idea of this mind-body connection, which is really valid. It's really important to emphasize that. And I think like there's sort of a tactile sense that we start to build up through doing yoga that is so important. Looks like I said to you, so many people do not feel at home in their bodies. Like they feel like they're just not connected. And so yoga at its core builds up that mind-body connection, which is so important. But when we're starting to work on doing this kind of muscle activation, yama stuff, what isn't connected a lot is the brain to body connection. And we think we kind of take that for granted. We assume that things are going to be working by starting to start addressing that. And what I have found is that by building up that that neuromuscular connection, we start actually amplifying that mind-body connection in a very profound way where people are actually starting to understand the language of their bodies. Like so many, and I'm sure you've said this to people, I've said this to people like, hey, student, you know, listen to your body. But sometimes people can listen to their body and not know what their body is actually telling them. It's kind of like me listening to someone speaking Japanese. I don't know a word of Japanese. But I can listen to them, but I don't understand anything that I'm hearing. And so I think part of the process is also like, okay, what are you feeling? What are you noticing? Okay, what is that actually telling you? So like in the yoga world, a lot of the times you might have heard people say like, oh, you know, go to that edge of pain and kind of ride it. And it's like, well, actually, pain is trying to tell you something. So I don't know why you would be wanting to cause yourself pain. And it's not to be ignored. We actually need to understand what is that pain actually telling us. So I think like, yeah, we need to build that mind-body connection, but we also need to build up that peripheral connection as well.
Yes. Beautiful. And so with your chronic pain, what yes. muscles were you specifically, just to give us an idea, what did you have to activate in order to help the pain that was so tight or stressed?
My big issue, I've had a few, but my biggest one has been in my lower back and right around L4, L5. And I started developing a herniated disc, and doing a lot of the yoga forward folds that I was doing to the degree that I was doing was exacerbating it. And I didn't know that at the time. I've been told by a few people that I had a very weak psoas. And so how did I interpret that? I need to stretch my psoas more, which is the worst thing I could have done. So in terms of answering your question, the number one muscle group of muscles that I was really needed to address were my hip flexors. It's no wonder why my back was in such a bad state. My psoas wasn't doing anything to kind of stabilize my lower back. But since you're very fascinated by, you know, this mind-body connection, here's a little fun, interesting thing about the psoas. This is often referred to as the muscle of the soul. And it's a muscle, it's called that for a few reasons, but one is because it connects sort of the lower and upper hemispheres of our body. It actually goes through like the first three chakras, the first lower three chakras, and then forms a base of support for the heart center, which is the home of the soul. So mine was not working at all.
Dang.
and I had to, you know, really work hard to get it a lot stronger. But, you know, the psoas is one of those key muscles that stabilizes the lumbar spine. So, and all of the hip flexors. So that was one muscle. Another big muscle I had to start working on getting stronger was my glutes. I've spent a lot of my time getting, since then, making sure that my glutes and psoas/hip flexors are activated and working properly. No, the psoas is really huge. It starts down at the leg, it weaves up into the iliac crest and connects to the entire lumbar spine and into even the thoracic spine. It is a hard muscle to get into. So you kind of have to know how to activate it properly. It's not an easy muscle to strengthen just because of where it is and the force angle to strengthen it, but you can do it. You just have to do it consistently.
And did you find when you strengthened it, it helped you connect to your soul purpose? Because it's the muscle of the soul.
I would say that getting myself out of pain and starting to feel a sense of strength and aliveness that I hadn't felt in years in my body was just powerful and really helped to reconnect me on a much profound level to my life purpose. You know, and one of the other things that I've come to realize, like when I've been in pain in my life, all my life force energy goes into basically how do I get out of pain? Mm. You know, everything I do and how I am is about how do I get out of pain? And you think about like, that's a lot of energy to kind of direct in that area. So what if we were not in pain? You know, that's when I notice like I'm more in purpose. I have more energy to be a nicer person, to be a better version of myself. You know, when I am in pain, it's much, those trying to amplify those qualities is a lot more harder. So I've kind of made it part of my mission to help as many people as I can get out of pain, because I just see so many people in pain and they don't have to be. If they just started taking a few different steps, and I'm not talking about like taking a pill or doing a certain meditation, just taking care of your body, just moving your body, doing a few muscle activations every day can change the trajectory of your life.
Yeah. And it's look kind of looking outside the box in a way, yeah. Right? And yeah, and even yours kind of, it did lead to this unorthodox perspective that is part of your purpose for sure, right? Sharing this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I didn't, Jane, I had no idea I'd be doing this. If you told me I would be telling people 5 years ago to stop stretching, I would have laughed in your face. I remember for years, one of my acupuncturists said to me, you know, you need to start strengthening your glutes. And then I said, well, I keep stretching them. I keep doing this pigeon posing. He's like, no, Aaron, I need you to actually get them activated, because they're supporting the entire lower back, you know. And he would go on and on, and I never listened to him. And I just, so, you know, we're ready when we're ready.
Right? That's what I was going to say. It's like people will say things to you, but you don't hear them until you're ready.
Yes.
It's so interesting.
For sure.
Yes. Thank you so much. Can you leave us just with a word of wisdom on following your dream and finding life purpose?
Oh my goodness. I mean, every day, you know, I wake up in the morning and I say to myself, am I living the purpose of my life, and how do I live it even more so today? Mm-hmm. And it's just an honest conversation I have with myself that helps to keep me on track. And I would just encourage other people to do that as well.
Do you find doors open when you ask, if you constantly ask?
I think that doors are always opening. I think that when I ask that question and I give myself permission to be still enough to quiet the noise, it's in those moments that I can see that the doors are open. And then the next question is, do I have courage to walk through them? But that's another topic and podcast. But I actually find, like, you know, all of us have doors that are opening, and everybody can look back in their life and go, oh, wow, what doors didn't I walk through? And so making that choice now, I'm going to start walking through doors, but we have to see them. And so many of us are so busy by the noise of life that, and the confusion of life, that we're just not able to see them. So I really think that there's so much power, again, coming back to that idea of stillness, that stillness gives us that moment to, oh, wow, the doors are open. I'm going to go walk through it now.
Yeah. And then to have the faith just to do it. Yeah.
Let's talk about faith, baby.
Let's talk about faith. Thank you, Aaron. I enjoyed this immensely.
Oh, thank you so much, Jane, for having me on. I appreciate it. It's nice talking with you.
If you've enjoyed the information in this episode, share it with someone you care about and know will benefit. There is one thing for certain. Meltdowns are inevitable. Let's move into mastery together. In the show notes, you'll find my link tree, which has links to many of the most popular platforms. You'll also find links to connect to the featured guest, webpage, and social media. Thanks again for being committed to mastery. Change in this world really starts within each of us.